Ah, yes. Well, when you hear that sound, you know it's time for a message in the bottle.
Do they?
They do now.
That's fantastic.
Brought to you by Bangor.
I have nothing more to live for.
Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in Bangor. Eric Meehan is here.
I am. I am sorry. I should be talking in my Barry White voice since we're here in the studio with Lime.
Thank you very much.
That's not my Barry White. I don't have a Barry White voice for obvious reasons. I'm not Barry White. So perhaps you're not wondering at all. You're just right now reliving all of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, in which case, turn off your radio, pull over, and don't let me stop you. It's a fantastic film. And just enjoy.
Tell people to turn off the radio.
No. Keep the radio on. Go home. Listen to the extent of the program.
Yes.
Then turn everything else off. Find it on Netflix or something like that.
Yes.
In fact, I believe it is on Netflix because I was just watching it the other day.
Yes,
so there you go. See? The Circle of John Cleese. Why were we listening to Monks Hit Their Heads? Besides the fact that it's hilarious.
That's awesome.
So today we're talking about the first place where monks started keeping records and started codifying wine as we know it. And that place, of course, is Burgundy Ombrée. And so we'll kind of get into this, but, it wasn't a hard-charging rock song, but I felt like, you know, even it was the most appropriate thing I could think of regarding monks. Except for perhaps Chuck the Monkey, but it didn't follow.
No.
So we went with that. Cool. So yeah, everybody. So we're back here talking this month about appellations and why wine from certain places is different than wines from certain other places, and why people have enacted laws to protect certain place-specific products, things like that. And how that all came into being. We talked a little bit about champagne last week. We talked and we enjoyed some California bubbles that had been produced by a French house Chandon and why they did that and stuff like that. So today we're gonna kind of go back to the original appellation and where it all kind of stems from, and that, as I said, is the region of Burgundy. For those of you who don't know or weren't there, probably at least most of you, back in the day, very often the church was obviously very, very powerful, right? And very often when people would die without heirs, the church would get their property. Very often when they would die with heirs, the church would still make sure that they got some of that property. People willed estates and plots of land to the church all the time. And that meant that the church ended up with a lot of land that they could kind of play around with. And indeed they did. So what ended up happening was there's a group of the Catholics called the Cistercians. And they were granted lands by the Dukes of Burgundy, whose lands were pretty vast, much bigger than the current region of Burgundy, right? And they started planting grapes all over the place. And a lot of these grapes obviously were forerunners of the current grapes that we know of, right? There was a lot of sort of distant cousins of the Pinot family that we'll talk about and things like that. Because obviously, as we've talked about many times on this program, grapes are highly mutatable. Every generation of them adapts a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more to the particular valley or streamside or mountaintop or whatever that they're planted on. And subsequently, if you go through, you know, swaths of countries where they ostensibly used the same grape, you will find in every place you go that they will have their own version of that grape, sometimes more than one version of that grape. And they will claim that as their own and tell you that the grapes from, you know, the next region over, and indeed several regions over, though, you know, on an international stage, they're called the same thing. They're very different. And so, that's really what they were playing with, is these early versions of the grapes. And the historical record goes back to the second century AD, right? So these records have been going a long time, although there's high likelihood that records even went back to before the birth of Christ in terms of people keeping records on grape planting and other agricultural plantings. So it's pretty crazy. But obviously the Cistercian monks being gifted these lands were the ones who were instrumental in shaping Burgundy the way it is. So, although I should note also, I see in my notes that not only the Cistercians, but the Benedictines had large holdings in this part of the world. However, it was the Cistercians themselves who actually were the ones who were very into the agricultural record keeping. So that is why we note them for, you know, keeping, you know, keeping accurate records of subplots of land, right? You know, this little plot did better than this plot, and this grape did better in this plot than this one. They created Burgundy's largest walled-in vineyard. So if you've ever gone to Burgundy and driven along the main drag towards the city of Beaune, you will see, you know, just like as we drive, you know, through greater New England, especially up here in Maine, you'll see stone walls, right, that used mm-hmm. to divide people's property. That's exactly what you're going to see. So these guys created the very famous vineyard Clos de Vougeot and subsequent other plantings around there. People started classifying these vineyards as early back as the mid-1800s. So the agricultural records were being kept. And then eventually the farmers, the growers that started to, you know, get the lands eventually from the church when the church had to give them up they had to give them up to Napoleon. Everybody had to give everything up to Napoleon. And then everything kind of got jumbled back and then came back together in small pieces of property. You know, this daughter or this son had, you know, this strip of this vineyard, and this guy had this strip of this vineyard. And gradually, sometimes those things were put back together. And of course, some of the things still stayed, you know, in larger chunks. But basically, Burgundy is one of the most sort of subdivided pieces of earth in the world because of that. There are literally, you know, this little part of this vineyard will be this family's, and then two rows over will be this family's, and two rows from there, and even parts of rows will belong to one person, one part, you know, this for the other person. It's pretty insane. And they started classifying those, as I said, back in the early 1800s. So they've been really sort of trying to figure out not only what grows best, but if it grows best there consistently, does that piece of earth become a more rarefied and an exalted piece of earth? And of course, the answer is yes. That's exactly what happened. what we know is the AOC system of classification, which is the Appellation Origine Contrôlée. I can't even speak French anymore. It's very sad. That's what happens on days like this when it's rainy right after it was beautiful. My French takes a dive. I don't know the correlation, but let's not worry about it. But anyway, so that system was not actually formalized until 1936. So you can sort of see the progression of, you know, hundreds of years of figuring out this grows here, this grows here, this grows here, this grows here, and then this grows better here than here, and this grows better here than here, and then finally codifying it all into formal, this is this level, and this is a better level, and this is a better level. And as you'll recall, typically, the better you get, the smaller and smaller and smaller piece of earth you're talking about. And why? Well, I mean, obviously, orientation towards the sun to help the grapes grow. What's in the subsoil? What's imparting its particular flavors, mineralities, other things like that into the grapes? Grapes that grow in better soils simply have more dynamism, perhaps more age-worthiness, things like that. So, and also, it's there's variations to the rules, but essentially the rules are in Burgundy. Just to get there, the red must always be Pinot Noir, and the white must always be Chardonnay. Because again, over the years and over the years and over the years, this is what they figured out. Now there are asterisks there. There are other grapes grown in Burgundy that are allowed, but you just have to sort of say they're in there. For instance, the grape Aligoté, you have to say that's a nice, bright, sort of perky white grape that was often blended into the Chardonnay when the Chardonnay wasn't super ripe. That was illegal if you called it just Burgundy, but if you say that the other grape Aligoté is in there, it's perfectly legal. The grape Gamay, which is the main grape of Beaujolais, which is actually the southernmost part of the département of Burgundy, you'll see that grown and mixed in with Pinot Noir, and you call that Bourgogne Passe du Grain, so all the grapes, Passe du Grain. Speaking of all the grapes, it's not just Pinot Noir that's allowed in there. It's Les Pinots. So it's all the Pinots, right? Pinot Blanc, Pinot Auxerrois, things like that. And so you'll go into these vineyards and very often people will be like, oh yeah, there's definitely some Pinot Blanc over there. And we just, you know, sort of mix it in like a field blend, and it's all perfectly legal because they decided that these, you know, the Pinot family is all, you know, sort of cousins of each other, and so they grew fairly favorably in these soils. So it's just kind of an interesting thing. Burgundy itself runs from the city of Beaune, essentially, down towards Lyon. You have, of course, the very famous Côte d'Or, which is where all the pricey vineyards are. Côte de Nuit, the Côte de Beaune. And then you get into the Côte Chalonnaise, which is kind of the back cousin, a lot of really good value there. And then the Mâconnais, the wine we're drinking today, is from the Mâconnais. That is the southernmost part of Burgundy proper before you get into Beaujolais. And the grape is Chardonnay. It's absolutely wonderful for Americans because it tends to be a little fatter and richer in that subsoil than some of the other places. And so people who like richer chards tend to like this. This is the Mâcon Ucigi, so that's the village it's named after. the family that makes it is Talmar. And it's fabulous. So if you're a white wine drinker who likes Chardonnay with a little weight but some acidity, drink that. I'm running out of time. I want to remind everybody our tasting this month is on the 16th from 5 to 7 p.m. So I look forward to seeing you all there. And we'll be tasting probably this wine as well as some of the other wines that we're going to be tasting on air as we talk about appellations at our tasting. And then next Tuesday, we'll be talking about on air here. We'll talk about New World and what they're doing with appellations and talking about single vineyards and stuff like that. So I will talk to you all next Tuesday. Same place, same time, etc.
Nice to have the newsletter back this week, too.
Thank you. Yes. Well, I finally am sort of back to normal.
Are you really?
We're getting there.
I mean, physically.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. Only physically. Only physically. Cheers, folks.
We're glad to hear that. Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. What music will we play next week for the segment? Join us next Tuesday and find out. Don't give it away. Don't give it. Make them guess. Always leave them wanting more.